You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What is good, everybody? Welcome to the SB Nation NFL Show. I am Rob Stats Guerrera, very pleased and privileged to welcome you to our 2022 NFL Draft Community Row. We are running through the state of every single division in the NFL. We did the AFC earlier on Tuesday, and now you are going to get the NFC. Before we get rolling, I just want to remind you that SB Nation and the NFL Show are brought to you by the DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the app today and use code SBNNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That's code SBNNFL only at DraftKings. Okay, we are going to answer the biggest needs from every single division for you. And in order to do it, we are going to talk to experts in those divisions from our SB Nation NFL communities. From the NFC East, we have RJ Ochoa from Blogging the Boys and Brandon Lee Gowden from Bleeding Green Nation. In the NFC North, Justice Mosqueda from Acme Packing Company is going to help make us smarter. In the South, I'm going to talk to Kevin Knight from The Falcoholic. And in the West, it'll be Mookie Alexander from Field Goals. So we have experts to break everything down for you. Let's not waste any more of your time. Let's kick things off with RJ Ochoa and Brandon Lee Gowden in the NFC East.
Welcome one, welcome all to a special NFC East mixtape version of the SB Nation NFL Show. I'm RJ Ochoa from Blogging the Boys. He is Brandon Lee Gowden from Bleeding Green Nation. BLG, you are the Joker to my Batman.
Ha 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 ha. Is that what the Joker famously says? Definitely.
No, the Joker
so famously, serious.
There we go. Or like, want to see a magic trick? So, you know, you got to do one of those. Those haven't been quoted a billion different times since 2008. We, of course, talk about the NFC East every single week on the NFC East mixtape, which is a unique podcast here at SB Nation because it is accessible on every single NFC East podcast network. That's Blogging the Boys for Dallas Cowboys coverage, Bleeding Green Nation for Philadelphia Eagles, Hogs Haven for Washington Commanders, and Big Blue View for New York Giants. All four teams congregated and assimilated into one neat place, their own place, but it's technically a universal place. And so, Brandon, we're here today on the SB Nation NFL Show to discuss some particular NFC East needs. I believe you have some questions for us to run through.
A couple questions here for you, RJ. Number one, I'm going to start it off. Which team is most likely to trade down in the 22 NFL draft?
Ooh, can I say the Philadelphia Eagles? Because they already did.
I mean, you can't say that because like that can't be your answer, that they already did and that counts as the answer. You can say that they might trade down again from 15 and 18.
I don't think that they will. I think they will sit and pick. I think that the team who is most anxious to trade down, I know you asked most likely, but I think that anxiety will transition into a reality, is the New York Football Giants. Amazingly, there are six or seven teams with multiple first round picks this year, Brandon. And there are two of them with multiple first round picks in the top 10. They both happen to play at MetLife Stadium, the true house of misery. The New York Giants have the premier two selections of the two New York teams. Shout out, of course, to Dave Gettleman and to Joe Judge. And I really believe, as do you, that the Giants want to move back. They want a first round pick in 2023. And why wouldn't you? Because they are likely going to need a quarterback then. And that is the draft to get one, not this one.
There are five teams in the 2023 NFL draft that currently have two first round picks. That would be the Eagles, the Texans, the Seahawks, the Lions, and the Dolphins. I think the Giants want to get in that mix because they're riding with Daniel Jones this year. But like the Eagles kind of did with their trade down, I think they want to have a security blanket, an exit strategy, an ability to pivot, if you will. And so I think they will very much be looking to move down and get a first round pick next year, or potentially, obviously, the Saints are a big candidate to potentially jump up to that number five spot, let's say, and maybe give up the picks that they have at number 16 and 19. And
maybe which came by way of the Philadelphia Eagles, as we mentioned.
By the Eagles. So maybe the Giants would be the team that has three first round picks this year.
Interesting. Okay. So that is the first question. We agree that Joe Shane, don't let the spelling, you know, catch up, people. Joe Shane is the general manager in the division who was most likely to trade down. Question number two.
Well, it's just going the opposite way, RJ. Which team of the four NFC East teams is the most likely to trade up?
You know, the Dallas Cowboys won the NFC East last year. That should be said out loud.
And then embarrassingly lost in the playoffs.
Uh-huh. So they sit the furthest back. I don't think the Cowboys are going to move up. They only have 9 picks in the draft, and they have a lot of needs. They, if anything, need to trade back as well. I wish that I had said that the Dallas Cowboys are most likely. I just don't know that I trust that they will actually do it. I think the team who is most likely going to trade up, if I have to pick a team, I don't know that I feel confident it's going to be anyone, but I think it's Washington. Washington is in the mix for a quarterback. Not that this is the draft to get one, but it would be very Washington-like to panic after one of Kenny Pickett or Malik Willis is gone and to feel like they have to get the other. And so I could see Washington, you know, doing what they did not do last year to go up against Justin Fields. We did a great episode of the NFC's mixtape last year talking about the what if they had not won the division, they would have been in premium position to draft Justin Fields. Not that, you know, he has necessarily worked out or anything, but they need an answer. I mean, it has been too long in the Ron Rivera era for them to not have at least, you know, I don't know that either of these guys is a franchise quarterback, but somebody who you can put on tickets and somebody who can put on a media guide or whatever, because they don't have that dude right now.
Well, they do. It's Carson Wentz, Commander Carson.
No way, dude. Not for the long term.
Not for the long term, but I do think for now, and I don't think Washington will be drafting a quarterback. I actually think they might just sit and pick there at number 11. Jameson Williams makes a lot of sense for them. He's the guy who I think they're actually like really zeroing in on and are going to take because they want to pair that speedster with Carson Wentz. And we've talked about it ad nauseum on the NFC's mixtape that Washington very much needs a wide receiver because it's Terry McLaurin who kind of might be holding out or wants
to. Oh, but he won't. He's a team leader.
He's a team leader. And literally no one else. So they need someone to kind of compliment him. And I think they'll be looking wide receiver there at number 11. I think the Eagles are actually probably the most likely team to trade up from 15, maybe to, let's say, 12, especially, let's say, if Derek Stingley is falling or Kayvon Thibodeau is falling, or Kyle Hamilton, if there's a player falling, I think the Eagles, it's kind of, that's just what they do. They did it with Devontae Smith last year. They did it with Fletcher Cox in the past. If they see a guy who they feel like is a, you know, bona fide top 10 kind of player slipping out of that range and they can move up a few spots and get him, they have 10 picks in this year's draft. So I think they have the ammo to do it. So I'm going to say it's the Eagles.
They did move up last year. They're actually the only team in the division that did move up in the first round, specifically in 2021, that trade happening with the Dallas Cowboys of all teams. They moved up for Devontae Smith, leapfrogging the New York Giants, who then moved back with the Bears, who took Justin Fields, and then Dallas took the best defensive player in the NFL in Micah Parsons. Okay, BLG, let's quickly run through each team's biggest need. By the way, if you want to hear some discussion on all four NFC East teams, you can always listen to the NFC's mixtape. But we recently had an episode where we had all four members of NFC Eastdom on the NFC East mixtape. Myself, BLG, Brian Stabby from Hogshaven, and Ed Valentine from Big Blue View. We all got together. We talked about what would terrify us for each team to do. So for BLG, for example, what would concern him for the Cowboys, the Commanders, the Giants to do. We had a great discussion. Everybody can go check that out on their preferred podcast feed. I'll start with the Cowboys first, BLG, because I want to. Guard. They need a guard. They have not addressed that position so far in free agency. Obviously, now there's not necessarily any viable option. They have to walk away with a starter at guard somehow, some way in this draft.
For me, I would say for the Eagles, I would say it is wide receiver because
wide receivers in back-to-back first rounds. What's going on here?
That's fine. But when just because Jalen Reagor is bad doesn't mean you can't draft another wide receiver because Jalen Reagor, I feel like, is a lost cause. And I think the talent level at receiver in this year's draft will coincide with the need for the Eagles and be a good value at either number 15 or number 18 overall. So I think they need some more juice for their passing game. They clearly tried to get more receivers, RJ. They tried to trade for Calvin Ridley. They were interested in Robert Woods. They were interested in Allen Robinson. They didn't land any of them. They only added Zach Pascal. That's not enough. They need a wide receiver. And sticking with that position, we kind of already brought it up. Washington, I think that's the easy answer for them. They just need more help there. If you're going to trade for Carson Wentz, if you're going to have any hope of that, salvaging that, which we both think is very far-fetched, but if there's any hope, I mean, give him a wide receiver, maybe outside of Terry McLaurin to work with, to give him some kind of chance.
No, thanks. When it comes to the Giants' biggest need, pick one. I mean, it's like spinning a wheel. You know what I mean? Like, just there are, I mean, what, it's very difficult to come up with a spot. We tend to build all NFC East teams.
Not at all.
Every
it's
year.
Very easy. It's offensive line. What has plagued the Giants for years? It's been offensive line.
My point is, you can make this argument about a lot of things, but you're right. The strongest argument is along the offensive line. If kind of like Carson Wentz, this is your last chance to get a real legitimate look at Daniel Jones before you have to, you know, reach that fork in the road on whether you want to commit to him long-term or not. You have to give him every opportunity to succeed, not just because that's the common sense thing to do for your quarterback, but because this is kind of a focus group year for the Giants and for that quarterback specifically.
And whether it's Icky or Charles Cross or Evan Neal, there's going to be a prospect there probably for the Giants, either at 5 or 7, maybe even if they do trade down. So they're going to have the opportunity to add to that offensive line. And I think that's a good spot to be in for them.
Joining us now to help us take a look at the NFC North from Acme Packing Company, Justice Mosqueda. Justice, thanks for hopping in here.
Whenever you need me, man.
So I feel like I'm, you know, kind of doing you a disservice. I'm putting you in a rough spot because I have to ask you a bunch of questions about the NFC North. And we got all these new general managers in the division. Basically, 3 out of the 4 general managers have been on the job for less than 3 years. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah in Minnesota is new. Ryan Poles in Chicago is new. And Brad Holmes in Detroit hasn't been there that long either. So good luck answering these questions.
As far as like the trends for the general managers go, yeah, we don't have a lot to work with. The one benefit of this, though, is the teams in the NFC North, their holes are pretty evident. So it's easy to pin down kind of what direction they're going to move forward.
Okay, well, then let's start there. What is the biggest need in the division?
I think it's wide receiver for Green Bay. You look at what they're doing right now, and Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard are basically one player, if you think about it like that. Like, Alan Lazard is like the base down slot and Cobb is the third down slot. So right now their starting lineup is like Sammy Watkins, Amari Rodgers, and Alan Lazard on base downs with Randall Cobb playing on third downs. So there's obviously a reason why they have, you know, 5 top 100 picks, 4 in the top, I think, 59. Wow. So they'll hit wide receiver at least once, you know, in that range. And whatever guy they end up taking might end up being their number one wide receiver for a quarterback who's come back from back-to-back MVP seasons. I mean, he's going to be asked to produce immediately.
That is a pretty big need. Pat McAfee has said multiple times on his show that the Packers seem to have something up their sleeve. Mark Murphy has mentioned, you know, the draft is always exciting. I mean, if Pat McAfee's talking about the Packers, I'm pretty sure we know the source. Do you think that maybe they can maybe swing some sort of trade and instead of drafting somebody, potentially make a move for a more established player?
I mean, it's something that we've talked about, certainly, at APC, where it's like, you know, hey, Terry McLaurin doesn't have a deal yet, right? I don't think anyone expected Tyreek Hill to get traded. Right. The Davante Adams stuff was evident. There had been contract disputes. We knew that they stopped talking about their contract back in, I believe, July. We knew there was friction there. But the fact that the wide receiver market has just changed so much over this offseason, where everyone's getting these high value deals, doesn't seem like every franchise is willing to do it. The price of guys, even like Christian Kirk, has it gone so high that, like, it's not even tenable for the team to re-sign guys like MVS, who signed a $30 million contract and basically just runs routes to clear open space underneath for other players, right, and run block. I mean, they signed Sammy Watkins to do the same thing for much cheaper. The fact that, like, maybe Washington doesn't have a deal done for Terry McLaurin, the fact that AJ Brown took Tennessee out of his Twitter bio, right? Mm-hmm. It's something that's important moving forward. So I don't know. I could see them making a move for one of those two. It doesn't sound like the DK Metcalf stuff is going to happen because ESPN had that, they had their beat writers basically pitch the Seattle beat writer, you know, trade packages, and they had 7 teams. And he was basically saying that, like, if it's not 2 firsts, they're not even going to have the conversation. And if that's the situation, I don't think they're going to package more than what they got back for Devontae Adams to either trade up or trade for another wide receiver. I think I would have to think it would be less than that. But if AJ Brown or Terry McLaurin are available, why wouldn't you talk to them? Because those are guys who can produce immediately. And like we said, it's the biggest need in the entire division. So
I just appreciate you not throwing Deebo Samuel in that conversation, who also is a free agent, who also scrubbed his social media of the 49ers, and who is not going to show up for the on-field portion of off-season workouts.
Well, that was like a week ago, and in NFL media cycle time, that might as well be a year. I'd completely forgotten about Deebo Samuel being potentially available already.
He is not potentially available, damn it.
$25 million per, he said.
Man, you're right. The market is just... it's crazy. And there's so many good wide receivers in the draft every year. I understand teams not wanting to throw that kind of money out if they have the picks that the Packers have where they could just draft somebody.
I've seen Aaron Rodgers throw to James Jones in a hoodie, and James Jones in a hoodie led the NFL in touchdown receptions. So I'm not so worried about Aaron Rodgers playing with maybe not the best wide receivers in football.
Fair.
There's a lot of people who are a lot more worried about what could happen with this wide receiver unit than I am, I think.
That's fair. I mean, James Jones, he's had some guys there that I don't think would have thrived nearly as much anywhere else. So maybe that's the route that they go. Let's jump all the way up to the Lions at 2. I think this is a great year to have the number 2 pick because the Jaguars don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't even know who they're going to pick at number 1. The Lions could potentially end up getting the best player in the draft at number 2, which is not something you usually say.
Yeah, and really, it kind of bodes well for the Lions, because if there's not going to be a quarterback that you can take that high in the draft, right, which is obviously a need for them, the next best position that you'd want is edge rusher, and it's a very top-heavy edge rusher class, or deep at the top end, where, you know, we could see potentially – you know, even with Kayvon Thibodeau, Aiden Hutchinson, Trayvon Walker, even a Jermaine Johnson sneaking up, George Karlaftis potentially being available at, you know, 32 when they pick. There's going to be guys there that they can draft and that will be franchise changers. The other position is corner. I don't think they could really take a corner at 2. I don't know if there's going to be a market for them to trade back. I don't know if anyone's trying to trade up to the 2nd overall pick. You know, you hear things about like the Saints getting that 2nd first rounder, how they're potentially trying to, you know, package picks and move up in the draft. I don't know if it would be that high. I don't know if they would be able to get the 2, but if there's an edge rusher there, I mean, you take the best one available and that's your dude at number 2. Cause I don't think I kind of thought Malik Willis would be available for them at 2. It doesn't seem like they like him enough to take him there, even though he seems like a pretty good fit, all things considered. Like he needs a good home in terms of just like a spot he could develop, right? I think with Jared Goff there, he could, you know, sit a year on the bench. Seems like everyone loves him in terms of, you know, leadership, and when they actually get him into a room and are able to interview him, I think that bodes well for, you know, his match with Dan Campbell. So maybe they trade up from 32. But I don't think that's a selection they're going to make with the 2nd overall pick.
Which team do you have the least confidence in to have a good draft in this division?
Whew. I mean, Chicago has no picks. So
they don't pick until 39, right?
Yep. And if you look at like their cash spending, it's really funny. So to put it into perspective, in terms of offensive cash, this is just offensive football, right? The Cleveland Browns are spending $168 million on their offense this year, right? I want you to guess the Chicago Bears.
$80 million.
$49 million.
What?
Yes. They're basically not spending any money on the offensive side of the ball. And if you look at the roster, it's pretty evident. Like they can't, I mean, they're pretty solid in the backfield, right? I mean, they have their franchise quarterback that they hope to develop, right? They have a solid running back unit. But outside of that, they can spend any pick on an offensive player at any position And you could say, like, yeah, that's fills a need. Like, offensive line, you needed it. You got outbid on a restricted free agent tender by the Buffalo Bills for, you know, a guy who's a borderline starter. You don't have any receivers right now, really. You need to spend picks on the offensive side of the ball. So they got to get Justin Fields some help. That's kind of my worry there is, you know, you talked about how they have a first-time general manager. They also have a first-time head coach, and he's a defensive head coach. So who knows how long, you know, Getsy is going to be there in terms of being able to develop Justin Fields moving forward, right? We could be talking about Getsy as a head coaching candidate. He got a interview by the Denver Broncos this past offseason, right? How long is he going to be in Chicago? There needs to be some sort of consistency around Justin Fields. I mean, you watch the film. I don't think anyone will say, like, the numbers were good for Fields last year. He definitely showed some flashes. Once they got away from running the Andy Dalton offense with Justin Fields, they were a whole lot better. But, like, he needs some help, man. He needs some help. So hit offense a billion times in the draft with the picks that you have is my advice to the Chicago Bears.
And then I look at Minnesota, and I just feel like everything was right for them to turn the page, right? They got rid of Mike Zimmer. They got rid of Rick Spielman. They bring in Kwesi Adofo-Mensah. They have a new head coach. And yet, who is still there? Kirk Cousins. And I have been on record that Kirk Cousins is not as bad as people say. That's my only position on him, which seems to infuriate RJ Ochoa. Or not RJ Ochoa, I'm sorry, Brandon Lee Gowden. But there's a ceiling there with Kirk Cousins. We have seen it. It's obvious. And yet they just keep re-signing him to deals and keeping him there. And it's like, what are you doing? Why are you content to be stuck in neutral?
It's very weird because I don't even think the Cousins thing is necessarily a ceiling thing, because when he's clicking, he does look like Tom Brady. I mean, in terms of like him just being able to operate at the line of scrimmage and just be like hyper efficient. The problem is he just has these like weird lapses where he's just like, yeah, I'm just going to be inaccurate, or I'm just not going to read this concept and I'm just going to force it. Like it's not a ceiling thing as much as it is a consistency thing. You're right about, you know, them potentially, you know, they had the opportunity to move on right this past off season, and they just chose to re-up with Kirk. And we've seen his former teammates, you know, say he's not that guy. Like
nobody likes him.
It's a real interesting position because, you know, Kirk, with how quarterback is in the NFC now, where, you know, the talent has just been depleted year after year. He's probably a borderline, like, consistent Pro Bowler now. Yep. Just like there's not 5-6 quarterbacks in the NFC who are better than him year to year. But they do need to add more talent on the defensive side, I think, too. You know, they've kind of figured out their offensive line issues a little bit in recent years, which was kind of the big thing for them, you know, in the past probably half decade. Defensive line will be interesting for them. I don't know if there's anyone to take at 12, maybe a pass rusher. You know, it's important to remember Mike Pettine is there as, I believe, like an assistant to the head coach or some title like that. Mike Smith is there. You know, they're both former Packers guys. They just signed Za'Darius Smith. If the plan for Za'Darius Smith is anything like it was in Green Bay, he's not necessarily going to play edge rusher. He's going to be more of like a matchup guy. Like he's going to be standing up, head up on a center sometimes and bull rushing. You know, the Packers, when they signed Za'Darius Smith, they also signed Preston Smith and then took Rashawn Gary, I believe, at the 12th pick. So they had to have three guys that they highly invested in to kind of put Za'Darius in the best positions. I could see Minnesota doing something like that. Opposite of Patrick Peterson, they really need another corner. So I don't know if they take one at 12 unless, you know, Sauce Gardner or Derek Stingley are there. I just don't think that they're going to be available with, you know, Atlanta is picking ahead of them, right? They seem very interested in corners for whatever reason, even though, you know, they have probably two pretty good ones in Hayward and Terrell already. So I don't know. We'll see where they go moving forward. I think edge rusher is probably like the sneaky pick where people would look and say, like, you already have Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith. Why would you need another pass rusher? But if you look at how these players are actually going to be used within the scheme that is going to be played there, I think it makes a whole lot more sense.
Well, that is the look at the NFC North. Again, Packers homer, Justin Mosqueda, thinks that the Packers are going to be great. I know how it goes. Everybody
13 wins, chalk it up, baby.
No. Thank you very much, Justice. You made us smarter, and hope to do it again soon.
Anytime.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It is time to take a look at the NFC South now. And to help us break down this division, we turn to Kevin Knight of the Falcoholic. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me back on, Rob.
So we're going through all the divisions, trying to get the lay of the land, so to speak. The NFC South, I'm not really sure what to make of it. You've got the Buccaneers here. It seems to me like Tampa Bay is going to waltz to a division title, barring something unexpected. Let's start with the Falcons, since that's the team you cover. What are they doing?
Right now, it seems like they're trying to preserve 2023 salary cap above pretty much everything else. So they're only signing 1 year deals except for Marcus Mariota. And they're bringing in a lot of low cost vets, guys that are sort of fringe starters, guys that maybe could be starters in the future, just sort of trying out a lot of guys, it seems like. And, you know, they have a lot of draft picks too. So we're going to get a lot of talent in here. But I don't know that that's going to translate to a lot of wins, particularly when you look at the schedule they're going to be playing this year.
So they are at 8 right now. What is the biggest need for the Falcons?
It depends on who you ask. I mean, I think that edge rushers are the biggest need, technically. They did sign Lorenzo Carter in free agency, but that's sort of like one of like four moves that probably need to be made at edge to make it somewhat competent. I mean, the Falcons had the fewest sacks in the league last year. So I would say edge is the biggest, but wide receiver is very close behind. And then, of course, there's the quarterback question as well.
That's the thing, because I think obviously Marcus Mariota is not going to be franchise quarterback for the next 10 years there. Quarterback, if you need a quarterback, that is always one of the biggest needs because it's the most important position in all of sports. What do you think is the biggest need in the division? Because the Falcons aren't the only team that could use a quarterback in the NFC South.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because I think obviously the Panthers really need a quarterback, you know, depending on what you think about what Ben McAdoo said the other day. Either Sam Darnold is the starter or he isn't. You know, we're not entirely sure there. You know, the Saints potentially could be looking at a long-term quarterback, depending on who you ask there. So, you know, that certainly looks like a position. I mean, even the Bucks could potentially be interested in somebody later, because I really don't think Kyle Trask is going to be an NFL starter at any point in his career. So quarterback overall, maybe the biggest like shared need. I mean, I think a lot of teams need receivers. A lot of teams need offensive line help, interior, defensive line, edge. Really, they all share some of those same needs. So
Carolina is at 6 right now. Do you think, you know, because they could obviously go quarterback, do you think Atlanta would consider trying to trade up if they're really high on a quarterback that they want to get ahead of the Panthers?
I don't think so. I don't get the sense that the Falcons are necessarily in on like Malik Willis mm-hmm. above anybody else. They've been very tight-lipped about it. So, I mean, there's always the chance that they secretly love Malik Willis and they're like going to go all out to get him. But I certainly haven't gotten that indication. And the fact that they passed on like Justin Fields last year leads me to believe that they're sort of fine, just sort of sitting and waiting to see if somebody they like is there. My personal thought is that they're going to try to either trade back and select Desmond Ridder a little bit later, or they're going to try to trade back into the first round for him, you know, and if he's still there like late in the first round. But I just don't know that they love anyone at like eight.
The Saints are the most confusing team in the division to me. And the analogy I've used is that they are trying to make a Big Mac without the special sauce, right? Everything's yeah. the same there. Dennis Allen is still there. Pete Carmichael is still there. They brought back Jameis Winston, but they don't have the guy that made it all work in Sean Payton. And if you try to make a Big Mac without the secret sauce, you just have a hamburger.
Yep.
So help me. The Saints are at 16 and 19. They made this trade with the Eagles. I still don't know what they were thinking when they made the trade. Can you explain what the Saints are thinking?
Well, there's one of two theories, right? It's that they're going to package those picks to move up for a quarterback. Like either they love Malik or they love Pickett or whoever, or they're trying to fill their two big needs, which obviously are like left tackle and wide receiver with those picks. And both of those routes could be sketchy because the left tackle still being there at 16 is probably unlikely. You know, they're probably hoping for like a Charles Cross to fall when it's more likely going to be like a Trevor Penning. And like, I'm lower on Trevor Penning, I think, than a lot of people. Like he was fun and nasty at the Senior Bowl, but like the tape is very scattershot, you know, for someone that you're considering in the top 20 picks. So I guess they're praying that a tackle falls if they're going to stay at 16. I mean, maybe they're going to package those picks and move up for an offensive lineman, and maybe that's the what they're going to do. But they need a receiver too. It's just weird that they traded away all these assets. I don't know. Like I think either they think they're like a piece or two away from being this great team, which
how could they
I just
think
don't
that?
See? I don't know. They've thought that for like every year for the past 5 years. Every year they just keep doubling down on the same strategy. So I guess I don't know why they would change that methodology now that Sean Payton's gone. But now it's like getting by with this ramshackle receiving core that's like just a little bit better than the Falcons receiving core. Without your sort of wizard offensive coordinator head coach that's sort of always been able to cobble it together and make it work. I just don't think that's going to work very well. I mean, Dennis Allen coordinating the defense has never been a problem. It's been the offense that's been the problem in recent years. So I don't know. I we'll see what they do, but it they're definitely one of the biggest wild cards in terms of do they package those picks or do they hope that the guys they want are there later.
And let's get now to Tampa Bay. They're at 27. Brady is coming back, although the more we learn, it seems like this was not his first choice. Now he's making comments about he knows he doesn't have a lot left. Yeah, we'll see. I'll believe that Tom Brady's going to walk away when he actually does it and right. does it for more than like a month. what is Tampa Bay's biggest need? Where do you think they're going at 27?
I think it's like interior offensive line is probably the biggest one because they had the Ali Marpet retirement. And, you know, they're probably praying that like Zion Johnson falls or something like that, which I don't think is particularly likely. You know, maybe Zion Johnson or Kenyon Green. But other than that, I mean, I think on the interior defensive line, they would certainly like more contributors. I mean, they still have Vita Vea, but they didn't bring back Sue. You know, there's definitely room to improve there. The edge group could still use some depth. I mean, maybe another corner. I mean, I think their top three are like solid. Their depth really got exposed last year when they started to get some injuries. You know, they had to sign Richard Sherman off the street. And that was sort of their Achilles heel after that. And they did have like four corner injuries. So, I mean, that's not going to happen to you every year, but, you know, for them, I mean, the overall roster is good. So it's just adding depth at a couple spots. And then they really need that interior offensive line, starter.
Especially with Brady, who we all know is not the most mobile guy. I mean, they've chosen right before. Tristan Wirfs was a home run. It was exactly what they needed. So maybe they know what they're doing when it comes to picking offensive linemen. Just in general, and maybe this is a little bit of an easier question to answer given where the picks fall, but if you had to pick a team that was most likely to trade up, which team in the division would you say?
I mean, it's definitely I would say the Saints, because they have the two first rounders. And I sort of was suspicious as soon as they made that trade that they wanted to move up. My initial thought was for a quarterback, but I think that the more you look at it, they brought in Jameis. They signed into a sizable deal. I mean, it's not like huge starting quarterback money, but it's a sizable deal. They brought in Andy Dalton. You know, they've got this sort of veteran quarterback room in tech. It's not going to excite anyone, but maybe they think they can sort of get by with it. So maybe they're going to package those picks and move up for an offensive lineman. You know, target one of those Giants picks, maybe. Because I just have a hard time thinking that like Charles Cross or one of these other guys is going to be there at 16. So if they really want that left tackle, they're going to probably have to move up for him.
Strange to me that in a division where, other than the Bucks, nobody really has their quarterback, the only team that seems to be looking there with any sort of urgency is Carolina. They are at six. The fascinating thing with me and the Panthers is they have six and then they don't pick again until the fourth round. I think it's 137.
Yep.
So they either have to love a quarterback or maybe as someone that covers the 49ers, my hope is that they don't take a quarterback at six and then they trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. Maybe they trade back from six and use some of those picks to acquire Garoppolo. But Carolina, I think, is in a fascinating spot because if they want a quarterback, pretty much their only option is to take him at six. Otherwise, they're going to have to work some magic to get a pick earlier than what they have now, which would be the fourth round.
Yeah, I mean, that team is in a very bad place, I think. I mean,
yes.
Rule's basically going into like a lame duck year if he doesn't add another quarterback. Like if they start Sam Darnold, Rule's basically acknowledging that he's going to get fired. and that's never a good situation for anyone, especially not your team. So that means that Rule's going to have to try to save his job, which means he's going to have to acquire another quarterback, whether that is like Jimmy G or Baker Mayfield, which I think has been getting a lot of hype. I mean, I think until they don't take Kenny Pickett at six, I'm just going to assume they're going to take Kenny Pickett at six, because I think Tepper has an incredible amount of control over that team. Mm-hmm. He's exercised it frequently, usually for the worst. And you know, he's a Pitt alum and Kenny Pickett has the connection with Matt Rule and all this. And, you know, Pickett was sort of the consensus QB1 for a while. So I don't think it's that odd to see him still be, you know, QB1 when the dust settles, at least in terms of who goes first. You know, I personally could never take Pickett over Malik Willis. I mean, the only reason I think they would, the Panthers, is because they need this guy to come in and start and be better than Sam Darnold. And I think Pickett, maybe Desmond Ridder, are the only two that I feel like confident about being able to be better than Sam Darnold. But then they don't have the left tackle. The offensive line's still in shambles. So I don't really know. I don't know that there's a good situation. I think the best move for them would be to get that left tackle because I think the value is better there, but I think they're taking Kenny Pickett. And until they don't, that's where I'm going with it. So,
I mean, just to take a 10,000 foot view with them before we wrap this up, talk about not being in a good place. You've got a team that just hired a new general manager in Scott Fitterer, who's working with a coach that he didn't hire, who's working with quarterbacks that he didn't bring in. You've got an owner that potentially is going to make a head coaching change after this season. Why then would you let that coach be a part of the process of drafting another quarterback with the sixth overall pick in the draft? Every part of the Panthers organization is in conflict with other parts of the Panthers organization. As someone that covers the Falcons, you've got to love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like in the NFC South, it's sort of like you have the Saints and the Falcons who just hate each other's guts, you know, and it's very ugly in a good way. And then you've got the Bucks who, you know, sort of whatever. And then the Panthers are sort of like that, you know, sibling rivalry. Like, we don't have a lot of animosity towards each other. It's sort of like a sibling rivalry. So it's sort of like, I feel bad for, you know, Panthers fans, but they're sort of going through a worse version of what the Falcons did when they kept Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff for one season too long. And this mm-hmm. is the exact same thing playing out for them, but the stakes are way higher because they didn't have Matt Ryan. They were sort of at the precipice of rebuilding their team. The Falcons, you know, we're sort of just making bad draft decisions, but not making the worst draft decision, which is taking the wrong franchise quarterback with a premium pick. And I feel like they're in that exact same situation and they're probably going to make the wrong call there by taking Kenny Pickett. But maybe Fitterer will just be like, no, I'm taking an offensive lineman. But I mean, that's still not necessarily going to result in them being a good team this year. I mean, the defense is certainly good enough, but we'll see.
It is one of the strangest divisions, but it's going to be a lot of fun to see how it all plays out. Kevin Knight from The Falcoholic, we thank you so much for the time.
Absolutely.
It is time to look at the needs of the NFC West. And as much as I can do that myself, I think we need to bring in a little help here. And that's why I'm grateful to sit down and talk with Mookie Alexander, managing editor of Field Goals, our Seattle Seahawks community here at SB Nation. Mookie, thank you very much for the time.
Great to be on here, Rob. Happy Friday. Certainly looking forward to the NFL draft. I know it's not a lot of hype for this year's draft, and it's because the quarterback class isn't all that deep. But there are still a lot of really talented players, and maybe the unpredictability of it all could create one of the more fascinating drafts in years.
It's kind of an interesting situation for both of our teams, obviously. You know, the 49ers didn't have a first-round pick because of Trey Lance, and then all of a sudden this Deebo Samuel thing pops up, and now we all have to be on notice because who knows what's going to happen there. And your Seattle Seahawks didn't have a first-round pick, and then the Russell Wilson trade happens, and now all of a sudden you're in the top 10.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. The Seahawks have a quarterback problem with Drew Lock as the presumptive starter at the moment. And the 49ers have a quarterback they traded multiple firsts to get. And their incumbent starting quarterback is somebody whom the rest of the league doesn't seem to be terribly interested in trading for at the moment. But yeah, Seattle is a pick 9, one spot ahead of the New York Jets. And of course, we know the Jets have the Seahawks pick at number 10. So to have a top 10 pick for the first time since 2010, a lot of things are available for the Seahawks, and boy, they have a lot of needs that extend beyond quarterback.
Would you say that quarterback for the Seahawks is the biggest draft need in the division?
I'm not sure, because I feel like this roster is already so deeply flawed that it would have been hard to contend even if you kept Wilson. Certainly to me, with the fact that they haven't re-signed either Dwayne Brown or Brandon Shell, they've got two tackles that are gone from the starting lineup, presumably, unless they resign over the next few days or so. So you need a new left tackle, you need a new right tackle, and currently the depth chart consists of Jake Curran, an undrafted free agent, who showed some promise last year in his few starts at right tackle, and then Stone Forsythe, wonderfully named, did not play one snap last year as a rookie on offense. So that's not going to fill anybody with great hope that the Seahawks are going to roll with those two on the offensive line. So yeah, the pass rush is a problem on the defensive side of the ball. But to me, offensive line is clearly the biggest need, because they really did the bare minimum this offseason anyway. They signed Austin Blythe to a $4 million deal to possibly be the new starting center. But that's it. And I would think that given the Seahawks' tendencies to draft for need more often than not, offensive tackle has got to be the biggest need for the team.
I know what it's like to have a pick high in the draft and have your fan base choosing between multiple quarterbacks. If the Seahawks did go with a QB, who has there been a favorite that's emerged among the fans in Seattle as to who they would want?
Yeah, I actually did a little poll, informal poll of sorts, on the Field Goals Twitter account on Thursday. And a lot of the responses came back as Malik Willis from Liberty. And that's humorous to me, because I did a poll a few weeks ago: who's the one player you do not want the Seahawks to draft at number 9? And one of the most common names brought up was Malik Willis. So a very polarizing figure among Seahawks fans. But Kenny Pickett, not a lot of traction there. Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati, I think, has generated a lot of interest. And maybe what's also stoking that fire, if you will, is the fact that he was brought in for a pre-draft visit. The Seahawks used a top 30 visit on him. He's the only quarterback that the Seahawks have brought in for a visit, actually. So I'm not terribly high on Ridder, as others may be. I like Sam Howell from North Carolina. But if they go with Ridder, I would not want it to be at number 9. In other words, if the Seahawks are going to go for a quarterback, I would prefer they either trade back in the first round or go for it in the second round. And I'd actually would prefer that they pick in the second round, especially since, you know, if a second round quarterback doesn't pan out, then the first round of next year's draft figures to be much deeper with quarterbacks, that you could still spend a first rounder on a quarterback. You have two first rounders next year.
When you look at the 49ers, I'd love to get your perspective on them. They obviously right now don't pick until 61. Let's say the stars align and, you know, things turn out great for my life and somehow Deebo Samuel resigns, so they they don't trade back into the first round. What do you look at when you look at the 49ers? Where do you see their biggest need?
Well, quarterback you would like to think is set just because they gave up all that draft capital to get Trey Lance. So whether Garoppolo stays or not, Lance should be part of the immediate future. They should be good at running back with Elijah Mitchell. Maybe Trey Sermon will be allowed to touch the ball again next season. Wide receiver, if they keep Debo, they're more than set because Brandon Ayuk is now more involved in the offense. He seems to be out of Kyle Shanahan's doghouse, and Juwan Jennings has emerged as a sensation for them, a very good third option at wide receiver. Tight end, obviously not a need. Offensive line, I think, is good. Cornerback, with the signing of Charvarius Ward, I still think that they could use some help there. And also the loss of Kaywan Williams. I really like Kaywan as that nickel option, and now he's over at Denver. So the Niners have found a hidden gem, perhaps, in Thomas, Ambry Thomas is his name, right? So, yeah, yep. From Oregon, I believe. So he could be an important part of the 49ers secondary, but in general, I think that they could use another cornerback, especially since that was considered one of the weaknesses of the team, certainly last year, and then Thomas emerged. And then 2 years ago, that was also a problem for the team because they also were decimated with injuries.
You have to have good corners in this division because you're going to be facing Ayuk and Debo and DK and Lockett and Hopkins and Kupp. It is unbelievable, the wide receiving talent in the NFC West. I agree. I think corner is a definite need for the 49ers. I still think they need to patch up their offensive line as well. Mike McGlinchey's coming off a very, very serious torn quad. That is not something that guys generally just automatically come back from. Let's pivot to the Arizona Cardinals. I think that their offseason has been absolutely terrible. I think that it's not out of the realm of possibility that Kyler Murray gets traded. I know that everyone there is saying the right thing, but they also said that Josh Rosen was their guy, and then they got rid of him and drafted Kyler Murray. So we can't trust them. When I look at the Cardinals, I think they need offensive help. I've been saying this. As much as Cliff Kingsbury is an offensive coach, I think their offense has been the problem. Their defense has been okay. So when I look at draft needs for them, I think they got to fix the O.
Yeah, Kingsbury's status as an offensive genius, if you will, that's probably one of the more overused terms in football right now. It's looking a little funny in the light with the way that they have collapsed the last two seasons. And that's whether or not Kyler Murray is healthy. That playoff game against the Rams was a real eye-opener for how badly they got shut down. Because the Rams' defense is obviously very good, but Arizona ripped them up in the first meeting, and then they got progressively worse with the last two games of the season, and to the point where their offense was so broken they were getting shut down by Detroit. So I think they will keep Kyler Murray, but this might be one of those last chance saloon sort of deals. I think that there might be some legitimate friction between Murray and the front office, but yeah, they did close to nothing in free agency other than lose people. I guess they re-signed A.J. Green, so good for them. But,
yeah,
I mean, they lost Christian Kirk, and Christian Kirk might have just set the wide receiver market on fire as a result of the ludicrous deal that he got from Jacksonville. Wide receiver might be a sneaky need for them because Hopkins, who's normally not injury-prone or anything, I mean, he's been in the league for quite a while. And you look at the depth. You don't have Kirk anymore. Rondale Moore is a very intriguing prospect. I think he's pretty exciting. But Andy Isabella, clearly a bust. And you don't have a whole lot there. Maybe you got Antoine Wesley, but this is a wide receivers league. I mean, what we're seeing from all the movement this offseason, wide receiving talent is at an absolute premium. And you've got so many great players coming out of the college ranks that can plug, you can plug right into an NFL offense in an instant. But I would say because they lost Chandler Jones, pass rush is going to be a serious need for them. Because they didn't sign anybody of note this free agency on the defensive side of the ball. So I could see them going on the defensive line, maybe even on the interior as well, because one of their weaknesses of an otherwise good defense, their run defense was so bad, and it directly cost them multiple games that I can see them trying to beef up their defensive line as a means of just getting basic run stops, because the number of times they were allowing 9-10 yard plays to develop when it should have been 2-3 yards at most was very glaring.
And then we get to the Rams. The Rams, who seemingly do not care if they make a first-round pick forever, although I will say it's a misnomer to say that the Rams don't care about draft picks at all, because they actually make a ton of picks outside of the first round. Now, this year, they don't pick until round 3. Obviously, they're coming off a Super Bowl championship. Where do you see the biggest area of need for the Rams?
Well, They did lose some players this offseason. Darius Williams away at corner. And look, last year, they might have won the Super Bowl, but there was a rough patch there with their cornerback situation. Rochelle and David Long, they weren't getting it done. So Ramsey, of course, we know, outstanding corner. But the depth there could use some serious work. So they could go corner a third round. Offensive line, they lost Corbett, I believe, to Carolina. And Andrew Whitworth obviously retired, and he went out a winner, so that's great for him. So I know Joseph Noteboom would be the odds-on favorite to be their starting left tackle, but still, the offensive line is what really makes any offense go. But the Rams in particular, their offensive line has been stellar for years, basically for as long as McVay has been the head coach. So they will always look for opportunities to beef up that offensive line, and it's part of the reason why they've been so successful. The depth that they've had, that they've been able to promote from within or get good trades like the Corbett one a few years back so that he could be one of their better starters. So when you're picking in the third round, obviously you don't see too many needs on your team. They care about draft picks in the sense that they will gladly trade them for established talent. But for their absolute draft-specific needs, I think offensive line and cornerback would be their two needs.
And when you build your team the way the Rams have done it, so top heavy, these picks are massively important. They're not going to get the coverage that other teams' picks are going to get because of where they fall in the draft. But this is your source of cheap labor if you are the Rams. So you have to nail these picks. They're going to be incredibly important if the Rams are going to keep this thing churning as they have been able to do throughout basically the entire Sean McVay era. Mookie Alexander, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it. You can follow him on Twitter at Mookie Alexander and check out all of his work at fieldgoals.com. Thanks for crossing enemy lines with me a little bit and talking draft with somebody that covers the 49ers.
It's great to be on. And I guess our goals for 2022 is make sure that 2021 doesn't happen again.
Right. Just not the Rams. That's
anybody but the Rams.
Thanks for the time.
Take care.
Thanks again to everyone for your time. We really appreciate it. Hopefully we have made you smarter about what to expect in the NFC. And this is just the beginning of our draft coverage here at the SB Nation NFL Show. Tomorrow, we are going to take you inside the draft room with five-time Executive of the Year, Scott Pioli. How do teams set up their draft room? Who's in the room during the draft? How do you communicate with different parts of your team? What do you do when you disagree and you are on the clock? All of that good stuff. We get into everything with Scott Pioli, and that isn't it yet, because on Thursday, we are going to talk to possible number one overall pick, Aiden Hutchinson. He's going to join the SB Nation NFL Show. Also, Penn State safety Jaquan Brisker is going to join us as well. Maybe other a few surprises too before it's all said and done. Then, don't forget, Thursday during the draft, live show on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. We are going to be here with you for the top 10 picks. Experts from all of our SB Nation communities are going to hop on with us. It is going to be fantastic. After that, we transition to a Twitter space. If you have questions about what your team did or didn't do, we're going to have experts from our team websites on the Twitter space with you. You can ask them and get the answers to the questions that you seek. So, perfect time. Rate, review, follow the SB Nation NFL Show. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Enjoy your Tuesday, everybody. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera. We'll talk tomorrow.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes, and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.